This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download, the podcast about the themes driving markets and the economy now and in the future. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, we discuss what happens when the party finally starts back up for the UK economy and stock market. We ask why the UK is so unloved.
I think that there have been a lot of negative headlines. You know, I think that it's unjustly unloved.
What's keeping investors on the sidelines?
To feel comfortable. They've got so many things to worry about that maybe Brexit is the thing that's holding them back.
And what will bring them off it?
So I think, you know, getting when life goes back to normal, you will see pent up demand. You know, a lot of catch ups that have been postponed, a lot of house parties.
Ah, the house parties, those were the days. Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. No doubt you've read the obituary for UK companies and the economy over the last few months. It's been hard to escape all the negative headlines since the pandemic began. In fact, even since the Brexit vote. So you might be of the belief that the end is nigh for UK PLC. If you did, then you wouldn't be alone. Even those supposedly in the know seem to feel the same way. A recent fund manager survey from Bank of America Merrill Lynch revealed the UK was the most unloved stock market among all developed markets. If you're interested, perhaps unsurprisingly, the US stock market is the most loved and the Eurozone is somewhere in the middle of the pack. So we thought it would be a good time to chat about UK stocks as the country braces itself to leave the European Union with or without a trade deal. To discuss this with me is Jean Roach. Jean is a UK small and mid-cap fund manager. She's going to help us get under the bonnet of the UK stock market. I should mention before we get underway that we'll mainly be talking about the FTSE 250 and smaller companies in relation to UK stocks. That's because they've got more exposure to the UK economy compared to the FTSE 100 companies, which derive most of their earnings from overseas. Before we get onto that, in the first part of the show, we're going to find out just why UK stocks are so unloved.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
You only have to look at the myriad of negative headlines over the last few months. UK suffers the worst recession of any G7 country. UK companies slash dividends. Treasury officials push for bombshell tax hikes. It's hardly the sort of bio that would appeal to an interested investor. So my first question to Jean is the UK and the press in danger of talking down its own prospects? And is this why the UK is so unloved?
I think that there have been a lot of negative headlines, like you say. I mean, the pandemic has affected every part of the world, though, as we know. I think Brexit is something that will come to a resolution of some sort, but it has been a reason for people not to look at some of the more attractive parts of the UK market, just a reason to exclude it.
But is there something fundamentally unattractive about the UK stock market which is putting investors off?
Yeah, I've been wondering about that myself, really. You know, I think it's seen as a low growth market, but as a mid-cap investor, I know that this isn't the case. And all I have to do is look at the growth chart of the FTSE 250 versus the FTSE 100, for example. I mean, the FTSE 100 is lower now than it was 20 years ago in terms of the absolute number before you strip out after you strip out dividends, and the FTSE 250 is higher even when dividends are stripped out. So you know, I think that it's unjustly unloved. I think that, you know, it's seen as low growth because there are sectors such as oil, such as maybe telecoms, which are seen as ex growth in the large cap area, and that's why investors maybe are avoiding some of those areas and maybe seeing it as a very income-driven market.
Income refers to dividends paid, which we'll get to in more detail later. But Jean mentions the growth of the FTSE 250 compared with the FTSE 100. So since New Year's Eve in 1999, the FTSE 100, excluding dividends, is actually down nearly 17% compared with the FTSE 250, which is up 176%. And remember, that's just the value of the companies alone. That is perhaps growth that has been ignored by a large number of investors. As we mentioned, it's hard to ignore those media headlines which are damaging sentiment. Even this week, the International Monetary Fund forecasts UK economic growth to fall by nearly 10% in 2020, the worst among developed countries except for Italy. But Roche says this is a known fact, and if you look beneath the headline numbers, there are many things to be positive about the UK economy.
I mean, it's a good recovery, I think, given what's happened. And, you know, activity was essentially turned off. And the headlines have changed. You know, it was at one point it was UK is doing worse than everywhere else. And then there were a few others looking similar to the UK in the second quarter. But then when you look at the third quarter, I mean, the Bank of England is forecasting Q3 GDP to go up by 20%. And I think that's a number that hasn't been picked up. So I think overall, you know, the UK has a lot of things about it that that can allow it to compete very, very well in line with other economies and better in some areas. You know, if we look at average earnings, for example, you know, back above where they were in February, and I think that might surprise people because that is there's a bit of a contrast, isn't there, with a lot of the media headlines that we see.
While it's difficult to ignore those headlines, there does seem to be better news seeping through for the economy. But it has undoubtedly been through one of the toughest economic periods in living memory when the majority of the country shut down earlier this year. That's had an impact on businesses exposed to the UK economy. But what is the health like now, 6 months on, for UK corporates?
So I think you can't really talk about the health of all UK corporates. I think there are certain sectors which have struggled, for example, the leisure sector, but that leaves something very interesting on the other side. For example, 30% of the capacity coming out of casual dining means that the survivors of this world, you know, the ones who have maybe who already had a more sustainable business model can come out the other side fighting and gain market share. And those ones, you know, are healthier now than they were. And some of them have even thrived. I could give an example of companies like Dunnell, More Pets at Home or Computer Centre, indeed, which supplies computer equipment and services, which is enabling the move to digital. Pets at Home, you know, people have more pets now and pet ownership is increasing. Dunnell, people are spending on their homewares because they're at home more. And these companies had invested anyway in digital transformation. So actually they can come out the other side more healthy. And some UK corporates have taken the opportunity to raise money for projects in 5G, for example, and that's gone down well with investors. So they might even have stronger balance sheets now than they had.
So, despite what you may have read in the papers, there is plenty of optimism for UK companies. Although, as Gene said, it's not a case of UK PLC as a whole. Investors will need to dig around. We'll get to more of that in the final part of the show. But in the next section, we're going to touch on geopolitics, in particular, Brexit.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website, shorters.com/investor download.
Welcome back. Brexit has been the noose that's been tightening around the neck of the UK economy ever since the vote to leave the European Union was made on June 23rd, 2016. The end, however, is in sight. The UK is set to leave on December 31st. But will that be the key to unlocking all this missing international investment?
Well, if you look simply at sentiment, yes, from a sentiment point of view, it's certainly holding certain types of investors back. But I think the investors with a long-term horizon who understand the UK market and maybe who look below the FTSE 100 can see that, you know, that maybe that in fact Brexit doesn't hold the key. It only holds the key in terms of sentiment. But in terms of getting the marginal international investor involved to feel comfortable, they've got so many things to worry about that maybe Brexit is the thing that's holding them back.
So, if the sentiment surrounding Brexit might be holding broader investment back, a lot might rest on whether or not the UK can agree a trade deal with the European Union. Press reports suggest there is a game of brinkmanship going on between negotiators, but how likely is it that the UK will get a deal done by December 31st?
I think most commentators expect that there will be a deal of sorts. I've seen probability put at around 70%. That feels, you know, I find it difficult to argue with that. So, you know, it seems probable that because it would benefit both sides, that a deal should be the most likely option, the most likely outcome, I mean to say.
It's not just Brexit, of course. The UK economy has been hit particularly badly by the pandemic, as we mentioned earlier. While there's been arguments about the UK government's policy towards supporting furlough workers and closed businesses, Roche says their approach is having a positive effect, particularly for the UK small and mid-cap sector, otherwise referred to as SMIDs.
I think we can see that the UK is already recovering from the pandemic, actually, and that some of these targeted measures to protect jobs have really worked. And I think you can see that particularly in retail sales, because the fact that jobs have been protected and incomes have been protected has meant that we've had some interesting trends in spend being redirected to certain areas, you know, away from some areas and into other areas. But actually, spend has held up really quite well. So I think what the government has done has actually helped to instill confidence and helped to protect the incomes of households. So, yeah, I think, you know, the UK is on the road to recovery and, you know, has been, you know, relatively creative in its approach to protecting livelihoods.
Governments can't save every business, unfortunately. So the next round of government measures is aimed at making sure that businesses that are keeping alive should be with us for the long run. It hopes to avoid creating zombie companies, which are basically companies on never-ending life support, only able to generate enough cash to cover the interest on their debts.
I think, you know, there's been a statement about not saving zombie companies, you know, the companies that even when the economy is fully open again and everybody can go to whatever restaurant they want to go to with 25 friends as opposed to five friends. You know, I think it's a practical thing to say that there are some businesses which weren't healthy before anyway. So I think the attempt to identify the companies that are only having a difficult time now, but actually can do well long term, is a good one. I think you know, many of these levers that have been pulled are working quite well. But you know, we haven't been through a full year yet. We've only had 7 months of this, so you know, we're still feeling our way. But it feels like a more knowledgeable UK public going into the winter, actually.
And we can't talk geopolitics without touching on the US election, which is taking place on November the 3rd. But what effect, if any, will it have on UK stocks?
I think, you know, in the area of the market I focus on, small and mid cap, it's probably a reasonably secondary effect because the niche companies I look at do tend to be in control of their own destinies as opposed to, you know, global multinationals. I think, you know, a clean sweep, though, would probably benefit the stock market in either direction, either a red or a blue.
So certainty around Brexit and the continued recovery from the pandemic are more important than the US election outcome. But uncertainty still lingers. So in the final part of the show, we're going to discuss mergers, dividends, and take a look at which sectors look attractive as we ask why now then for UK equities. We've looked at why UK stocks have been so unloved and some of the uncertainties that might be holding investors back. Now, we're going to look at some of the reasons why now might be a good time to invest in UK stocks.
Why now? Because I think UK is an extremely good value. There are many stocks that have just been had the baby thrown out with the bathwater. They're in creative areas. They have strong management and they're high quality. And I think we saw late last year that the UK market outperformed with a little bit of more certainty around the political arena. And I think, you know, the same thing could happen again this year very easily. So I think you've got the high quality companies, you've got potential catalysts and, you know, more generally, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of a vaccine or a better understanding of how move forward through the pandemic, and you know that's bound to come in the reasonably short term. Actually,
I'm sure we've all walked past half empty or empty bars and restaurants waiting to be filled by revelers as the restrictions are lifted and the vaccine comes. So could that be the catalyst to unleash some of that pent-up consumer demand?
Even when you watch TV now and you see somebody being interviewed, when they, you know, if they're sitting less than 2 meters apart, it looks a bit strange. So I think, you know, getting when life goes back to normal, you will see pent up demand. You know, a lot of catch ups that have been postponed, a lot of house parties, and I think we are seeing a shift in demand. demand though as well, and that, you know, that may persist. I mean, one is from eat-in to takeaway. Another thing is from public to private transport. I mean, once people get used to having their own car again, we've seen residual values of secondhand cars increase, actually, as those maybe who never learned to drive are learning to drive and thinking, actually, maybe that's how I want to run my life going on from here. And then also there'll be categories of spend, you know, where from store to online, for example, which, you know, may move that way more permanently.
If that pent-up demand is released, and we do see a shift in demand too, are there any sectors at the moment that look appealing?
I think for me, the consumer services sector, and in particular the retail sector, it's been, you know, in the property market, that's been seen as an area to avoid. But actually, there are parts of it that are quite attractive, which are specialist areas, as I mentioned before, companies which are well managed in a particular niche of growth where spend is moving into that sector. I think a really interesting end of the property sector is that's exposed to logistics, the last mile, to data centers, to retail parks as well, actually. And, you know, there are a few companies, maybe like Segro or like London Metric, which are exposed to that. There's also interesting self-storage companies. Those aforementioned companies, very exposed, obviously, to online retail, which is a massive growth area. You know, online retail has gone to, you know, settling now at about 30% of all retail sales in the UK. And then another growth area in the property sector is self-storage. And so you could have companies like Big Yellow, like SafeStore. Actually, they're relatively rare, but, you know, this is an area of growth, and it's reasonably defensive as well. I would not say by any means that all property is to be. There's, you know, inflexible workspace as well. There's, you know, that is only going to grow in importance. Being able to approach your corporate offices as a flexible notion. I think that just becomes more important. So it's, you know, having a nimble property portfolio, or a portfolio that just is responding to what people want now. So yeah, there's certainly areas in the property world that are very interesting at the moment. But I think it's more, you know, from my point of view, it's individual companies, you know, as a stock picker, that look, one looks more attractive than another.
We've seen in the US in particular that growth stocks, so those companies which increase their revenue and earnings faster than the average business, such as the tech firms, have been winners for a long time, and for the moment continue to be so. But is this the same for the UK? And if recovery picks up speed, will cyclicals, so those stocks that benefit when consumers start to spend on luxury items, start to outperform?
I think that you've had, companies which are exposed to certain technologies, clean tech, for example. The big theme has been hydrogen, hasn't it, which have really taken off. But I think, you know, as you say, it boils back down to really knowing your stocks and knowing where the growth lies. That's always my, you know, whether you call a company a growth company, but actually, you know, you might say, for example, I know one stock which is maybe badged as a value company, but I know that it's grown the top line by 15% in the last three quarters. So I think it's kind of knowing the individual thing that your company does, and not necessarily badging it growth. And I think, you know, then you might say, you know, what should you do about cyclicals? Well, there are some cyclical stocks which have more, which will grow anyway, which have maybe some more defensive characteristics to them. It might be a house builder that's more exposed to, say, building social housing or something like that. I think I kind of shy away from categorizing stocks too much and try and look at the individual company.
And with the UK unloved, valuations attractive, and the economy recovering, could we see benefits of merger and acquisition activity?
I think it's been very interesting recently. We've had, for example, William Hill, we've had G4S, we've had Asda being purchased. I think that is showing you, you know, it's not just the talk, it's not talking the talk, it's actually walking the walk, coming along with the cash and offering it for a company. And that shows you, you know, that you think that company is undervalued at the moment and you're willing to pay for it. And so when that's a very public statement to the markets, isn't it? That you see growth in this company from here, and that's why you're buying it now, and it will add to your existing private equity portfolio, or if you're a corporate buyer, that it will add something that you can't add to your own company. So I think that's a really interesting development for the UK market.
Dividends have been a hot topic since the pandemic began. Many were culled or put on hold, either out of necessity or at the behest of regulators, to protect balance sheets at the start of the pandemic. But what's the situation now?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen the most recent quarter, I think I saw the data come out today, dividends down 50%. I think there's a bit of a reset, you know, but certainly in my end of the market, the dividends have always been more sustainable in any case, with companies distributing, you know, having cover of about 2x, distributing about half their earnings. Whereas in the large cap arena, historically, companies have been distributing a bit more, so not as sustainable potentially. And also, I think, as I mentioned before, maybe not having as much growth on the top line anyway. So I think what we're seeing now is maybe companies being braver about saying, actually, I'm holding some of that cash back because I want to invest it into growing my top line. I want to invest it into, reinvest it in the operations. And maybe there's a reset where expectations of the investor are lower in terms of income, and they're willing to allow management to do a bit more investing. And I've seen that from, for example, companies like Next, who have said, you know, well, we want to think about, you know, if we see an attractive project to invest in, then we're actually going to go ahead and do that, and we're going to think twice about distributing cash to shareholders, because if there's an attractive return on investment to be had, as opposed to distributing it to the investors, then that's what we're going to do. I think that's a very positive thing, actually. And if it's, you know, one of these things that's happened during the pandemic, you know, there has been in sort of 6 or 7 months, you know, there are things that you might have thought might take years to develop. But maybe this resetting of dividends to become more sustainable in the UK market, particularly in the larger end, you know, maybe the pandemic is the catalyst for that. And I think if I can circle back, there are other areas as well, you know, too much space and casual dining, and this reset is probably a good thing, because the companies that come out the other end are healthier, more sustainable, and, you know, more responsible, and we are more responsible investors investing in those companies.
So is there a general theme among the companies that will thrive?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, I think it's generally, you know, the theme is that the companies whose management are embracing disruption, or whose management is enabling disruption, they're the ones that will thrive. I think the companies that have invested in digitalization, you know, a very simple thing, you know, a pub company which has developed an app so you can order your drink at the table. So pubs doesn't feel like a great place to be right now, but the pub companies which have been creative, and I've seen also other pub companies actually talking about working from pub as opposed to working from home. You know, that's creative thinking. You know, how else can I use this space I have? And, you know, how can I make the most of these assets that I've already got and already invested in? So I think it's about being adaptable. And, you know, there's sometimes sectors which may appear to be sectors to avoid, that have some very creative management teams involved in managing the companies in there.
Work from pub, that gives me an idea. But as you've heard from Jean, the UK isn't in quite as bad a shape as the headlines might suggest. And if investors focus on firms that are innovating and dealing with the disruption, providing they do their hard work, there are rewards to be had. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch with us about anything in the show or have ideas for future shows, contact us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Jean's written an article, What Happens When the Party Starts Back Up. You can read that at schroders.com/insights. To listen to more, you can go to the Investor Download at schroders.com/the Investor Download, or rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every other Monday and every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time.